Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Dr. Matt and Dr. Mike's medical podcast. Today, I am joined by my co-host, my articulating other
co-host,
Dr. Matthew the Bone Barton.
The union is always pleasant.
Oh, how nice. We are simply saying these things not because they are true.
When to become one.
Well, I don't think any joints become one. And now I've just given
it away. It's fibrotic.
True.
Well, anyway, let's get to it.
Joints, Matt. We're doing joints. We're talking about joints, all things joints. Joints are really interesting structures. The body is filled with joints. When you think about joints.
How many joints?
I don't know. How many?
Well,
Nice going. Ask a question we don't know the answer to.
I can give you a couple of estimates.
All right.
Do you want to give you estimates?
Let's do it.
All right.
I mean, we haven't really defined what a joint is, but that's cool.
You start. What's the definition? This is important. To get the number, we have to get the definition down pat first.
I think so.
Okay, so you start with the definition.
Well, the first thing is when I say joint, people probably think of all the common joints that we see when we move our arm, our shoulder, our elbow, our fingers,
jaw,
and our leg, our knees, our toes and hips, and also the jaw as well. But there's far more joints in the body that you don't just see in those using those examples of joints. They're all actually pretty much just one type of joint, those ones that I just stated. But there's others, right?
Because they're movable.
They're freely movable joints that sit within a particular category of joints. But there's so many others that we actually don't recognize as joints. And then this then leads us to
just give me the definition. Definition. Okay. Just give it straight to me.
All right. So this is probably one of the worst starts of any podcast we've done
straight
so
out,
far.
What's the definition of a joint?
The definition that I think is the great definition of a joint is it's the site of union or articulation of two or more bones or cartilage.
Like it. I right. Like it.
So,
or you could even say skeletal elements if you want to be a bit more broad.
You could, but I won't. I like the word articulation because articulation is synonymous with joint. And when somebody articulates themselves in speech.
Don't look at me.
No, I promise you I won't. It's when they bring the right word together that fits perfectly with each other. So Matt, when we talk about articulation, doesn't do it.
He's dislocated.
Yes, he's dislocated. His language, his lexicon is dislocated. But myself, I'm articulated.
Okay. Well, that's a good start. So let's just say work off because the first question you asked. Actually, you just brought one up. I asked the question.
Yeah.
But to answer this wonderful question, how many joints do we have in
the
body?
You mean the question you asked? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. We need to work off the back of the definition, which is the site of two or more skeletal elements.
Right. No, we're going bones, back to my definition.
Bones, that are come together.
Right. You can't tell me to define it and then supersede it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yes. I'm very happy with joints are the site of union or articulation of two or more bones.
Now, the reason for why I said it's hard to give you a number is this is for point one. Point one is when we're born, when we're born or infants, we have more bones than we do as an adult.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So therefore, the definition of more than one or two or more,
this is the worst.
Two or more bones coming together means they're going to be more bones to put together in infants or babies than there is adults. Because babies have 270 odd bones.
Okay, wait. This is a great example of how poor Matt is at articulating. You're simply saying that in babies, in infants, the science of articulation is greater than in adults because some of those bones have not fused together yet. And therefore, once a bone is fused together, you lose the articulation and you lose the joint.
That's great. That's right.
All right. So how many joints do babies have compared to us?
Well,
you asked the question to begin with.
Based on the number of bones, you can go from there. Well, if you look at...
But I won't and you will.
So I don't know the number. Well beyond 300.
Okay.
In the younger populations before the bones have fused. So particularly long bones, we know they have growth plates at the end of the long bones. So that's between the epiphysis and the diaphysis. That's a bit of cartilage. Does that make sense? Between the end and the shaft, that is technically a primary cartilaginous joint. Yeah. So it's still a joint. But as we get older and as bones close, theoretically, the joint will disappear.
So one point I'd like to add here when it comes to joints before we start going into the various classifications of the different joints is that not all joints are movable or at least freely movable joints, which is what people tend to think about when we think of joints. Like I said at the beginning, if I say to my students, what joints do you think about when I just say joints? They all go shoulder, elbow, hands, knee, hip and toes. But obviously there's many, many others. So I think that we should talk about the various classification methods of joints.
Can I just ask, I need to add one more thing into it that makes it additionally difficult.
Yes, please.
Is we also have bones in the body that are known as sesamoid bones.
Right.
Okay, the classic example is your patella.
Mm.
Is that a joint? So would you consider your patella onto your femur or tibia as a joint?
If it articulates with other bones or cartilage, then absolutely I do.
Okay, all right. Well, that's
Do you classify it as a joint?
That's going to add to the number.
Right. Do you classify that as a joint personally?
I wouldn't.
No, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So I think we've got at least 40 sesamoid bones in the body.
Right.
Okay, so then you can decide whether you add those to the mix or not.
So we will decide, dear listener, by the end of this podcast whether it is a joint simply through a fisticuff-based fight.
Or it's just a little bit of bone floating around in a tendon or a muscle.
Right. I'm sick of this. I quit.
Okay.
So let's classify.
So between 250 to 350 joints in the body, there you go.
Okay. Wonderful.
You're welcome.
Yep. That took 7 minutes to get to. So when it comes to classifying joints, there's actually no one way to classify
joints.
There's
actually three.
All right. Firstly, you can do this any way you want, but firstly you can classify them in accordance with the range of possible movement, so the degree of movement that they perform.
How much they
move.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty much in the definition. And the second way is by classifying it in accordance to the nature of the tissue between the bony structures. So what tissue is there? You know, is it cartilaginous? Is it fibrous or so forth? So you can classify it according to that. Now you had a third one.
Just whether it has a cavity or not. So if it has if the joint is separated by a cavity, that's generally referred to as a synovial joint, or if it's filled with something.
It's a solid joint.
A solid joint. Yep.
So
that's technically three, but in a way that would just kind of be the connective tissue really.
So what I think we can do is we can actually incorporate all three classifications in one. So firstly, if we take that final classification of whether there's a synovial or a solid joint, we can say, okay, let's now just focus on the solid joints and we're going to classify them according to the nature of the intervening
connective tissue
in between. And then once we've done that, we can talk about how freely movable they are.
Like it.
Right? And then we can move on to the synovial. So to begin with, we're going to be taking those solid joints. Like Matt said, it doesn't have a joint cavity. So one bone is connected to another bone, or one cartilage is connected to another cartilage by some sort of tissue in between. And so the very first type here is that of the fibrous joints. So fibrous joints, these are bones joined by fibrous connective tissues.
Yep.
The second type is a cartilaginous joint. Now, these are bones joined by cartilage tissue or cartilage and fibrous tissue. And then finally, you've got those synovial joints, which have the cavity in between, and that cavity is filled with a synovial fluid and it's surrounded by a capsule, but it has a cavity, which is the big difference. Cavity, yep. So if we classify it by just the tissue, we've got fibrous, cartilaginous, and synovial. Now, if we classify it in accordance with its movability, how freely movable it is, we're starting to bring in some difficult terms here, right? First term here,
This is based on movement.
This is based on movement, okay. Right? And then we can start talking about of those joints that are fibrous, cartilaginous, and synovial, how freely movable are they? And we can start using these terms. So the first term I want to use is that of synarthrotic or synarthrosis.
Yeah.
Now, this means immovable. It's an immovable joint. These bones and the joint in between does not move.
Right.
So what does synarthrotic mean?
Okay, so
I know it means immovable, but as a word, we know that it's based in Greek or Latin or whatever it may be. What is the
three main parts to it?
Yep.
Syn, S-Y-N, so that's the prefix. That just means together with.
Okay.
Okay. Arthro, it pertains to just joint.
All right.
So whenever you hear arthro, it's just meaning joint itself. Osis was a hard one because when I looked at that, osis can actually mean a process or a state, but it also can mean an abnormal condition.
Right.
So sometimes you might hear the term arthrosis and it can actually mean
like atherosclerosis.
Kind of, yeah. So arthrosis technically is the same as arthritis. I mean, arthritis is inflammation of a joint.
Mm.
But when you look at osteoarthritis, to be technical, it's not really just inflammation.
Right.
It's a pathological state of the joint. And so to be correct, it really would be osteoarthrosis.
Right.
But when you hear synarthrosis, that would indicate that there's kind of something pathological happening.
I always thought osis was meant pertaining to. So I would have read synarthrosis as bringing a joint together, and the osis is just saying pertaining to, so bringing a joint together.
Yep.
That's how I would sort of interpret
like the state of being, but it can also be an abnormal state or abnormal condition.
This makes sense when you think about synarthrosis meaning immovable, syn meaning together. So it's a together joint basically what it's saying.
That's right. Immovable, immobile, doesn't move, fixed.
And whatever other synonym you'd like to use. The next one is amphiarthrotic.
So you can keep all the rest of the term. Right,
which means slightly movable.
Yeah. So the only thing that's changed here from the synarthrosis is the amphi or ampi?
I say amphi because it's okay, A-M-P-H. Amphi.
We'll go with amphi. That just basically means on both sides or both kinds. So an amphitheater would be a stage with
two
audience on both sides. Or an amphibian can go from water to land.
Right. So amphiarthrotic means, it's – slightly movable.
Yep.
It can be immovable and it can move as well. So it's both. It's slightly movable. And then you've got diarthrotic. And this means freely movable. Yeah. So this is tricky. So what is the etymology here of diarthrotic?
Di just is double or two. So two joint.
Right.
So it's not like you're double jointed, but it really just pertains to it's freely moving.
Okay. So we've got three joint classifications here based on how movable it is. You've got immovable, which is synarthrotic. You've got slightly movable, which is amphiarthrotic, and then you've got freely movable, which is diarthrotic. Yep. And now we can bring this in together with our classification we used earlier in regards to the type of tissue in between, which remember was fibrous, cartilaginous, and synovial. So a fibrous joint, there's actually a couple of different types of fibrous joints in the body. There's three types, I think, of fibrous joints in the body. And predominantly they're immovable to slightly movable, right?
Yep.
So what would be the terms we use here?
For those?
Yeah, if they're immovable to slightly movable, again, what were those terms?
No movement is synarthrosis.
Yep.
And slightly is amphiarthrosis.
So fibrous joints are synarthrotic and one of which is amphiarthrotic. So what are the three types of fibrous joints? And we can talk about how movable they are.
Well, you got the sutures.
The sutures. All right, tell us about sutures and where we can find them.
So a classic example of where you would find a suture joint would be the skull.
That's actually the only place you can find a suture joint.
Okay, there you go then.
Yeah.
So basically when we are developing in utero and then we're a born baby. A born baby.
Yep.
So a newborn up to...
I thought Jason born baby. Sorry, I thought there was going to be a baby who saves the world. Sorry.
So these plates of bone, they're like a flat sheet of bone. They are your skull bones. So you have kind of the calvara, which is the top part, and then you have the skull base. So we'll focus on the calvara, which is, you know, like the frontal bone, the temporal bones, the parietal bones, the occipital bones. They're just like a sheet of bones. Now, they have a primary ossifying center, and they kind of spread out as they move towards the next sheet of bone.
Yeah.
Now, for a baby, a lot of the bone is still cartilaginous, so it's still open, and that allows, as the brain gets bigger, the skull can get bigger with it. Now, as the baby ages, these joints start to get infused.
Also not fused yet because they need to be able to move through the birthing canal.
Oh, yeah. So they definitely almost slide over or across each other.
Like tectonic plates.
That's what I was about to say the same thing.
Yeah, but so, I said it first.
Particularly, well, I guess it's only going to happen if it's a vaginal delivery. So it's as it gets pushed down the birth canal and comes out, the head will be probably squashed to some degree.
Yeah.
And it will take probably a few hours to kind of bounce back into.
Or in your case, 42 years. So we've got these plates and they're not fused yet. And if you have a look at them, the lines that separate one plate to another looks like a suture and it comes together. And as you age so when one bone plate comes together with another bone plate, you've actually got, because remember it's called a fibrous joint, right? You've got collagen, basically. Fibrous joints are basically held together by collagen.
So you got the two bone ends.
Yep.
So you got the bones, which is, we know what a bone is.
Yep.
At the end of the bone is hyaline cartilage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the end kind of lining of the bone. But then we have this kind of cambrial area, which is like this kind of radiating connective tissue, which is the osteogenic cells. So they will eventually become probably bone-like.
Yeah.
And then you have the capsule of the bone and then that's held together between the two elements with like ligament-like structure. And all this together is the sutural ligament.
And then as you age, this connective tissue that you've just stated between those two bones slowly disappears.
Yeah, ossifies.
Ossifies. The bone fuses. You get that suture look. The skull bones should not be able to move by now, so hence it being called synarthrotic.
Yep.
And this fusion of bone, this is a new word for everyone, is synostose. Synostose is when bones fuse. All right. So only in the skull do you have sutures.
So that
they are one part of fibrous joints.
So, yeah, once that has calcified or once that's fused, then you're not going to get any movement. Now, there are some practitioners that think they can manipulate the suture joints.
And they be wrong.
You know, in conditions where they think, I don't know, there's – what are the –
who knows, some crap.
Sacrocranial technique?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Not possible. And a good way to indicate this to be the case, if you were to have an increased pressure within your skull bones aren't moving – the only thing that gets moved or compressed is your brain.
There
and you so
go.
If these were still open, like you would see in a baby when you have increased intracranial pressure with a baby, you'd actually see the fontanelles start to bulge out.
That's right.
Because there's still a degree of movability.
And the fontanelles are?
Oh, well, they're kind of the communication points both anteriorly and posteriorly.
They're the joint sites.
Yeah, or at least in multiple places.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so that's the suture, which is the first type of a fibrous joint. What's the second type of fibrous joint?
Your teeth.
Yeah, I love this word.
Okay, you say it.
Gomphosis.
Gomphosis. So
that's the tooth in your gum, right?
Yes. So the gomph part.
Excuse me?
Not the osis, but the gomph.
Forrest Gump.
Is
good
what,
movie.
What that means is to fasten with bolts.
Right.
Or peg-like.
Well, so, it's a peg-like joint, isn't it?
Yeah, so you have the tooth, the crown is what's kind of sitting up above the gum, but then you have like the root going down into the socket, so the bone itself.
Well, it's not really bone though, is it?
Well, the bone of the skull that it sits in, so yes. Which is either going to be the mandible or going to be the maxilla.
It's the alveolar bone, to be specific.
Right?
Yep.
And so the bone or the pegs go into the bone itself of either the jaw or the maxilla, right?
The pegs of the tooth.
The pegs of the tooth, right. And so as the root of the tooth goes down into the socket, there's going to be certain structures within the tooth like the canal, the pulp, and then the cementum, I think it's called. That's kind of where it gets anchored, but then you've got the periodontal ligament, which is kind of what binds it to the sides of the skull.
So to make
or the jawbone.
So to make it simple, the tooth is in the jaw, specifically the alveolar bone, and collagen is holding the tooth into the bone with the periodontal ligament as the anchor point.
And I'm assuming the periodontal ligament is what would have to be ruptured to pull the tooth out.
Yes,
that's right. So a question that I have, and I know the answer to, but I want to ask you, is, well, technically the tooth shouldn't move in your jaw, but in some cases it does. So, for instance, braces, I had braces, and the whole premise of that is you're applying forces to the tooth. So orthodontist. So the orthodontist glues these kind of things onto your teeth and then puts wire on it, and then they can wind the wire up to put tension on it.
Yep.
Why does that allow movement? How does that allow movement if there's no movement in that joint?
Well, because it's obviously putting force, and it's like when you have a tree growing. If I went into your backyard and tried to push a tree, it's not going to move, right? Yeah. But with enough force and pressure, you can influence its movement. So you can actually take a tree and you can mold it over time. If you've got a fence in the road or whatever, you can mold its ability to move. And it's the same thing.
So basically,
but this is an important point because people go, oh yeah, teeth can move in the jaw, so it's a movable joint. It's not. It's synarthrotic. Mm. Teeth in the jaw should not move. But again, think about it as though you're running full pelt at a tree. The tree shouldn't move either. But obviously with enough force, yes, it can. Or if the roots are damaged, yes, it can. Same with the tooth.
Yeah, so
basically, the end.
But basically what's going to be remodeled is the actual bone itself. So the bone that the tooth sits in, by pulling it in a certain direction, so either pulling or pushing the tooth can actually reabsorb the bone as it moves along.
Oh, interesting.
So it actually moves in the bone itself.
Makes sense.
But
makes
not
sense.
In the joint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've got two now under fibrous. We've got the suture, and they're the bones of the skull, and the gomphosis, which is the tooth in the gum. Very specific joints, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not found anywhere else, only those particular places. Then we've got something called a syndesmosis.
So we already covered that. That's together with.
Yeah.
Desmo.
Yeah. Go on.
Like Desmond. No, that's basically.
Named after a dude.
Or the Beatles in the marketplace. Desmo is a band or ligament.
All right.
So it's basically the joint together with a band or a ligament.
I like this. I like the syndesmosis. So you've got this like dense regular connective tissue fibers. That sit between two generally long bones, right?
Yeah.
And it's also known as like an interosseous membrane.
Yeah.
And so if you take your radius and ulna of your forearm or your tibia and fibula of your leg, these are bones that obviously run parallel with each other. And they're bound together through this interosseous membrane, again, which is known as a syndesmosis. You happy with that?
Yeah. And so the function of this interosseous membrane, so like you said, between the radius and ulna, or tib and fib, would be to help stabilize the two bones. But they're also important for muscle, side of muscle attachment. So a lot of, let's say your forearm, a lot of the forearm muscles to some degree attached to that particular interosseous membrane.
Yeah.
But also to help transfer forces through those bones.
Yeah. Oh, it's like the biceps. Obviously, biceps have an attachment at the radial tuberosity, I believe, but also at the forearm, like a banded sort of attachment at the forearm. Now, I don't know if that's actually attaching more to the muscles.
To the muscles.
Yeah, yeah. My bad. So ignore what I just said. So we've got three now. We've got under fibrous joints, and now we've exhausted. Actually,
the other one you
syndesmosis. Wait. Is it immobile, free, slightly movable, or freely movable, the syndesmosis?
I would say it's amphiarthrosis.
It is slightly movable. Correct.
The other example you could give for a syndesmosis,
oh yeah,
would be the ligamental flavum, which is kind of between individual vertebrae.
And another one is the sacroiliac joint as well. There's a interosseous membrane there too.
I wonder. I think that one becomes also ossified as we get older. So
yeah,
it almost becomes the sacrum and the ilium becomes kind of locked as one bone.
Like you said, when to become one. All right. So that's fibrous. Now on to cartilaginous. So cartilaginous, this is where we have sort of like a pad of cartilage wedged between the ends of the bones. Again, there's no joint cavity here. Same with fibrous, no joint cavity. The difference here is that it's cartilage in between, not fibrous tissue. Now, you can have cartilage and fibrous tissue, but the point here is that there's cartilage in between. And so there's, what, two types of cartilaginous joints?
Primary and secondary.
Yep, primary and secondary. And so the primary joint is called a synchondrosis.
So we already know what syn is. That's together with.
Yep.
Chondro.
Cartilage.
Cartilage. Osis. So
pertaining to.
Yeah.
Relating
so,
to.
So it's a joint that is jam-packed or together with cartilage-like
and it's
tissue.
Usually hyaline cartilage, right? So this is that smooth, glassy type of cartilage that's there to reduce friction. And is that right?
Yeah. So within this particular one, these primary joints, so like I spoke to you earlier, some classic examples within the developing human. So this would be baby all the way up to puberty. A classic primary cartilaginous joint would just be the end of the long bones, so the growth plates.
Yeah. So between the diaphysis and epiphysis, you've got the epiphyseal plate, which is also known as the growth plate.
Yeah.
And when you become an adult, it's just called the epiphyseal line. But this is a primary joint, a primary cartilaginous joint, also known as a synchondrosis.
Yeah.
And that's hyaline cartilage in between.
Yeah.
So is it that hyaline cartilage has osteogenic cells?
Yeah, and that, just the direction of how they grow would be given the ability or the bone to lengthen.
Right.
And that's why fractures through that particular growth plate can be so problematic, particularly in developing children, because that may, let's say it's in the leg, it can impact the length of that developing, let's say, femur, which could be significantly problematic if the other one's growing at a normal length and the other one's, I don't know, three quarters the length.
That's maybe that's what happened to me in both my legs. So do you think this is immovable, slightly movable, or freely movable?
I'd say also slightly. You've got other examples being...
I would say synarthrotic. I would say it's not movable at all. It's immobile. It can't be, right? It's between... It's right at the end of the long bone.
Are we just saying primary, full stop? Or are we saying this particular
example? Primary, this example.
Well, you also got costochondral and you got ziphosternal. So
but they're immovable. They're immobile.
Really? Completely?
Yeah. They're synarthrotic.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So that those, so you're basically saying all the primary cartilaginous joints should
synarthrotic.
Be synarthrotic. Okay.
Yeah, immobile.
Okay.
But the next one, the secondary, also known as the symphysis.
So what is that?
So sym means together.
Yeah.
What's physis mean?
Growth.
Oh, together growth. So this actually has like a fibrocartilage pad between the bones. Yes. There's also some fibrous, so it's fibrocartilage pad. So it's got fibrous tissue, but also cartilaginous tissue. And fibrocartilage is usually there to resist sort of compressive forces.
Yeah.
So you sort of find these in the vertebrae.
Well, they're all in the midline. On the midline.
But you can have, there's a bit of fibrocartilage in your knee.
Yeah. Well, that's a synovial joint though.
Sure.
In terms of secondary cartilaginous joints.
This specific type of joint, all midline. So it's pubis and
IVDs, so individual vertebrae. Discs. And interestingly, the front of your mandible.
Really?
So the mandible,
I didn't know that.
So the mandibles come together in midline and join.
Yeah.
So technically there is cartilage there, but it would fuse.
That's a secondary, not a primary.
It's a secondary. So it would fuse. I mean, for us adults, the mandibles are one bone.
Yeah.
But technically there is a disc or a small bit of cartilage there. Some animals, it's still open as a joint. So
really?
The baleen whales.
Oh, yeah, we're all familiar with that.
Well, these are whales that take a lot of water in and sieve through the baleen, and then that is how they extract the food from the water, opposed to tooth whales, which I guess just
– filter it through the teeth.
No, just
– chew.
Bite and chew things, yeah. Right. So what they need to do when they open their mouth, so you open – this is my assumption here. Correct me if I'm wrong, marine biologists. Open your mouth through the temporomandibular joint, which is a synovial joint, but they can also open their jaws at this secondary cartilaginous joint. So they can also open in that plane. What's that plane? A frontal plane?
Not very good for a podcast.
Sagittally and frontally.
Yeah.
So that expands the volume in their mouth.
Yeah.
And then they can fill up the mouth so much with the water and then shoot it through the baleen, which then gives them the creel order.
And so that's because of this secondary cartilaginous joint.
There's still a movable joint.
So it's a symphysis.
Correct.
So
whereas
us,
it becomes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Bone.
So symphysis is a slightly movable joint then, right?
So it's technically a mandibular symphysis, and that closes at the second year of life.
So it's amphiarthrotic.
Yeah.
And that's
but your pubic synthesis and then all your intervertebral discs are also a secondary cartilaginous joint. But, you know, with your vertebra, all the movement that goes through your vertebrae are through synovial joints, like the facet joints or the ribs. But the disc itself, there is that movement there. Now, didn't you, one of your acquaintances or colleagues spoke about when you're doing, deadlifts or squats and you're putting a lot of force through your intervertebral discs, there is actually, through the compression of the discs, the movement. What was it like? One third of the movement is in through the discs, whereas the synovials are two thirds.
Okay.
And that's important for stability through putting a lot of force. I'm sure you said that to me.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
But maybe somebody else said it too.
Just in reference to the danger of overloading the discs.
Gotcha.
In just the way that the weight distribution is put through, say, the articulate facet joints opposed to the discs themselves.
Right. Yeah, okay.
But in terms of the cartilage of the intervertebral discs, they've got this kind of annular fibrosis, which is these concentric rings on the outside of the disc, which is very strong.
Connective tissue.
And then in the inside of it is the nuclear pulposus, which is a distensible, is that the correct
jelly, term? Yeah.
Jelly. But then if you are wearing these fibrotic outer concentric circles of fibrous tissue down, or maybe one particular gross acute movement can cause that to rupture. And then the pulposus can not slip.
Bulge
or herniate outwards, right? Which then can be problematic depending on where it goes to. If it goes into a spinal nerve or the spinal cord, can be problematic. But those discs are generally bigger as you go down the vertebral column because they are doing what you said a cartilaginous joint do, is resisting the compression forces.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've gone through all the what we call solid joints, which is bone to bone, no synovial joint, no capsule or anything like that. They're divided up into fibrous joints, which we said have sutures, syndesmoses and gomphoses. We've got cartilaginous joints, which are primary, also known as synchondrosis, and secondary, which is known as symphysis. And now we're moving on to the final joint type.
These are your favourites.
Which is, this is everyone's favourite, every student's favourite, because we always ask them to remember them. Give examples and talk about how freely movable they are. These are the only freely movable joints in the body. These are the ones that when you think of a joint, these are the ones you're actually thinking about. These are called the synovial joints. And the synovial joints are basically...
diarthrosis.
Yeah, they're freely movable and they've got a capsule, right? They've got a joint capsule in between.
Six things you should know, six features. There are six wonderful features that a synovial joint must have to make it synovial. Do you want to hear those six things?
I don't know if you're asking me because I think you know the answer to that. Yep.
I'm going to say it anyway. So not particularly in any order, but I'll just put it one to six. The first one, the two bones come together. What are they lined with at the end?
Cartilage.
More specifically, please.
Real smooth cartilage.
Hyaline.
Hyaline cartilage.
So the bone ends have to have hyaline cartilage.
Right.
Okay, good. They need to have a joint capsule, which is kind of like a connective tissue covering. Is that like a...
I'll say a capsule is just a space between the two.
Well, that's going to be the cavity. The capsule is like...
Well, the capsule is what's covering
it. Yeah, that's right. So the capsule wraps up the two ends of the bones, right? So you've got the capsule, and then by putting the capsule, then you now have a cavity.
But what's making the capsule?
What's making the capsule? Well, connective tissue. So connective tissue that is wrapping the two bone ends at some particular point up, which then gives you that cavity between the two bone ends.
All right. So now we've got hyaline cartilage, a capsule and a cavity. So three things.
So the next one is some kind of ligamental support. Because it is a moving joint, it needs to have some degree of reinforcement.
And the space between them, they could easily dislocate from one another.
So the joint capsule itself wouldn't be strong enough to keep them together. So you do need ligamental support.
And ligaments bind bones to bones.
So that's right. And so these ligaments can be either intracapsulally or extracapsule.
Okay.
So within the actual cavity or outside the cavity. So an example of... So this is a classic example of an intracapsular ligament. Can you give me one?
No.
The cruciate ligaments.
Oh, of course.
So they're kind of within...
All the cruciates?
Well, at least the anterior-posterior.
Sorry?
Yes, anterior-posterior, intra. And then if you look at extracapsular, so outside the capsule, that an example would be the collateral ligaments.
Right.
Okay.
So these are holding bone to bone and it can be inside the capsule, outside. Right. What's that? Is that five or four so far?
That's four.
Okay, what's the fifth?
The fifth is a synovial membrane. So that would be on the inner lining of the joint capsule. That's a particular type of...
Epithelia?
Yep.
And that secretes a fluid?
It's like a synovial... Well, it is a synovial fluid. Like a serous fluid.
Yep.
Okay, which has different elements in the fluid. And that is to provide lubrication. Now, it's not as much as you would think. So the knee itself only has half a mil of synovial fluid.
Oh, really?
So once it gets too much, that's like an effusion and that would be called problematic.
Right.
But it's only enough to provide that kind of lubrication.
So is that five and six having this?
No, the last one is just movement. Oh. So the sixth
freely free movement
is movement, yep.
So say them all quickly. What are the six components of a synovial joint?
Hyaline covering at the end of the bones, a joint capsule, a joint cavity, some degree of ligamental support, whether it's intra or extracapsular, a synovial membrane, which is very important for providing that lubrication, hence the synovium, and the movement, which is the diarthrosis.
Beautiful. All right. Now, when we look at the synovial joints, there's actually six joint types. Whew, good fun.
Not to get confused with the six features.
That's right. But you can think six and six. Synovial joint has six features, but it also has six types, six classifications. And while they may be freely movable, they are freely movable within particular planes, right? So if it moves within a single plane of movement, so let's just think up and down, right? That's one single plane. You would call it uniaxial. If they move within two planes of movement, you will call it biaxial. And if they move in more than two planes of movement, you would call the joint a multiaxial synovial joint. But all synovial joints will either be uniaxial, biaxial, or multiaxial. So I've now created the world's best mnemonic to help you remember not just the six synovial joint types, but also whether they're uniaxial, biaxial, or multiaxial. I'm not going to ask you, would you like to hear it? Because again, it is rhetorical because I'm going through it anyway. All right, you ready? And it's royal themed, right? Because everyone loves the British royals. So.
Did you make this one up?
I did make this one up.
That's impressive. So you also had a royal one for your antibiotics.
Yeah. Well,
you're a monarchist.
Yeah, I've got a monarchy fetish, don't I? Which I didn't think about until now. Now I'm going to think about this a lot. So this is the mnemonic. Pen and paper out. Prince Harry pulled Charles's saddlebag. I'll say it again, ladies and gentlemen. Prince Harry pulled Charles's saddlebag. Interpret that any way you want. I know they like to ride horses, but if they're not riding horses, don't really know what's going on there. So, Prince, it's a mnemonic. So the first letter is going to be the first letter of the synovial joint. So Prince, the P stands for planar, a planar joint. Harry, the H stands for a hinge joint. Pulled, the P stands for a pivot joint. Charles, the C stands for a condylar joint. Not Condoleezza like Condoleezza Rice, but a condylar joint. The saddle, the S stands for saddle. So that's an easy one to remember. And bag, the B stands for ball and socket. So we've got Prince Harry pulled Charles's saddlebag is planar, hinge, pivot, condylar, saddle, and ball and socket. Now, to remember whether they're uniaxial, biaxial, or multiaxial is easy. It goes 3, 2, 1. The first three are uniaxial, planar, hinge, and pivot. The next two are biaxial, condylar, and saddle. And the last one is multiaxial, ball and socket.
Love it.
All right, so let's go through them one by one and talk about how they move and where we can find examples of them. What do you think?
I think that's...
Are you cool with that?
It's a must.
It is a must. An Elon must. All right, so let's have a look first at the planar joint. So a planar joint is easy to remember. Think about the plains of the Serengeti, the flat plains of Africa.
Okay.
This is a planar joint. It's two bones.
Where are you going with this?
There's lions and tigers. No, tigers
there's
aren't.
There's no tigers in Africa.
Okay, I was just going through lions and tigers and bears, oh my, from The Wizard of Oz, but that's more of a song and my Judy Garland fascination. So a planar joint, flat.
Okay.
Two bones, either end.
So they're only moving in one direction.
One plane.
So just like sliding back and forth.
That's right.
Now, where do you find this? Not in Africa, but in your body.
Well, interestingly, you can find nearly every single synovial joint in your hand.
A plane.
No, like planar, hinge, pivot.
All examples.
All examples, pretty much in your hand. But what I'm going to say is that a good example of a planar joint where the two flat bones come together at a synovial joint and they just move in uniaxial, so, you know, forward and back, or around in the flat plane surface, this is going to be...
So if you were... You finish.
Yeah, thanks. you love doing that, don't you? So there's two bones of the hand, right? One called the triquetrum and the other one, pun?
Triquetrum.
Yep, the triquetrum and the hamate. Hamate looks like a hook. Hammer, right?
It's got a hook on it as well. Yeah.
Right. So these are two flat bones that come together and they move in a uniaxial plane. That's the planar joint.
So
the,
if you were...
The triquetrum?
Yeah, triquetrum.
Yeah.
So if you had a...
Triquetrum and a hamate.
If your car broke down and you needed to, you know, get it along out of the road...
Yeah.
You'd have to do some carpooling. So carpools, the carpools are an example of this joint. Just go with the carpools.
Yep.
It's just easier. They're all plane joints.
Yep.
Yep.
Great. All right. Yeah. Happy with that, everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. Hinge joint. This is also uniaxial. So this is easy. What has a hinge? A door. How does a door open? It swings, right?
Closes, opens.
Yes, but this doesn't close or open. It just swings because like the elbow joint, which is a hinge joint, it swings.
Yeah.
Right? Just like a door does. And so this is only in one particular plane. So it's uniaxial.
Here's one for you.
Right.
Knee.
Yeah.
Is it hinge? This will test you.
The knee, no.
Why?
Because it doesn't have a hinge joint. It might move in that plane, but I don't think the joint is a hinge joint, Matt.
Okay. It's called a modified hinge, so there is rotation in it.
Yeah.
And that's like the unlocking of the knee. So when you put it into full extension,
yep.
It locks in place,
yep.
Which is hypothesized to reduce the energy of your muscles required whilst you're standing.
But I said that before you did.
But yep. Then to unlock it, there's a bit of rotation that's put into the joint to kind of unlock it.
Unlock it, yeah. That's
so
what
there
I
is
said.
A bit of rotation.
Yeah.
Well done. So you're right. It's not a true hinge.
Yep.
So you're not unhinged. Well done.
Oh, very good. Pivot joint. This is the last of the uniaxial. So think about it. It pivots. If you are pivoting from one place to the next, you're quickly turning, right? Okay. When I see – if I'm at work and I'm walking down a hall and I see Matt, I quickly pivot and go the other way. So pivot means turning, right?
I actually missed a train in Bulgaria for this reason of this joint.
Because you pivoted.
Well, I didn't. I asked a person in Sofia, which is I think the capital of Bulgaria.
Yeah.
I asked them about a train not location – whether this train is going to a particular location.
Yeah. And did you ask in Bulgarian?
No, I asked in English.
Yeah.
But broken, like, you know, very simply.
Broken English, so you couldn't even speak your own language.
I asked just based on very descriptive, basic descriptions of
yes.
This train go to blah. And yeah. The person pivoted their head.
And she said, where's blah?
They pivoted their head.
Yeah.
So when you pivot your head, this is between C1, C2.
Yeah. Turn it. Yeah.
Right. So what does that generally mean as a non-verbal?
What do you mean?
Pivoting your head.
Turn your head.
Yeah. What's this?
Oh, no.
No. Which it means yes in Bulgarian.
Right.
So I thought, oh, it's not it, but it was yes. So as a result, I missed the train.
I wish I could find that person and congratulate them and thank them for making your life more difficult. So like Matt said, pivot joint, a great example is that of your cervical vertebrae.
C1, C2?
Yeah, the two top ones.
C2 is the axis.
Yeah, you interrupt as often as you like.
That's the axis of pivoting.
Thank you. The very top one, C1, is called the atlas because just like the Greek god Atlas holds the world above its head, it's holding the cranium or the skull above it. So that's C1.
On its shoulders.
Yep, the atlas. And then underneath that is the axis, and it's sort of got this projection that goes up.
Odontoid process, yep. Or dens.
Dens that goes up, and there's a ligament that sort of wraps around it, and then it allows for the turning of the head.
Pivoting.
So that's pivoting. So the pivot joint
that's
is
really
C1,
C2. I think that's the only real one plane of motion in your vertebra. So when you look at your vertebra as a collective, it's usually done as a whole group, but this is one plane of motion just between two joints.
Just twisting.
Yeah.
That's it.
Two bones, not two joints.
Right, so that's the pivot joint. So now we've moved out of the uniaxial joints. Now we're looking at the biaxial. So there's two joints here that move in two planes. The first of which is the condylar joint. Now the condylar joint's an interesting one.
Condylate rice?
Yeah.
Which is on the horse.
Yeah. No, different. So the two is actually the condylar joint and the saddle joint, right? Very similar. In a way, the condyle is sort of like a modified saddle joint, or the saddle joint's like a modified condylar joint. Basically, they both have – the way I see the condylar joint is like a really shallow ball and socket joint.
Right.
Right?
So there is a concavity and a convexity.
Exactly. Right. But it's more elliptical. So it's more like an oval.
I don't know what that means.
Like an oval shape. Right. Right? Like – the Earth moves around the sun not in a perfect circular orbit, but it's elliptical, right? So it actually moves in an oval shape. So it's sort of an elongated circle. So a condylar joint is like a shallow, elongated ball and socket joint. And it moves in two directions. And because it's shallow, it can't move in – it's not multiaxial, right? So that's the condylar joint.
Examples?
I'd say between the like metacarpals and the proximal phalanx. So, you know, when not when you're moving your knuckles, your major knuckles, but your second knuckles.
You want a wave like that?
No, that. Wave like that. Is it wave like that?
So say it between? The phalanges and the metacarpals?
Between the metacarpals and the proximal phalanx.
Yes, that.
Yeah. So the joint that you punch with. Yeah. When you make a fist a punch, what you're impacting on, let's say, Matt's face, that's going to be a condylar joint.
Or you do this wave. What's that wave?
That's like the Queen's wave. All right, so that's the metacarpal bone to the proximal phalanx, right? That's condylar. Then you got the saddle joint, and the saddle joint just looks like the saddle of a horse. So it's sort of not just concave, one part's concave, one part's convex, but it's sort of got a dip down either side as well. And the place that you can find this, Matt, is where just to get your thumb moving, right? If you want to move your thumb on your hand, what's that, the trapezium with the first metacarpal? Mm. Yep, that's a saddle joint.
Good.
Thanks. Matt was just showing me, hence being quiet, but it doesn't work well on a podcast.
No, it doesn't. So, nor the thumbs ups.
No, or this one, Matt, which is not going to repeat. Last one is the only multiaxial joint. That's a ball and socket
joint. This is pretty self-explanatory.
It's a ball and a socket. Hip joint, shoulder joint. Good examples? Can you think of any other examples?
Well, sometimes they say that the sternoclavicular joint is kind of a ball and socket, even though technically it's probably more of a saddle.
Yeah. But or condylar?
Well, no. I think it's more – it's either hinge or ball and socket.
Okay.
But the complexity of the sternoclavicular joint is that it's a multi-axial joint.
Is it?
Yeah.
Right.
So it can move in the three planes. Mm. But what makes it difficult is what makes the complexity to this joint is it's got a chunk of cartilage in it, a disc – which then makes it from a saddle into a ball and socket based on the shape changes that the disc gives the other bone.
Right.
So it's very complicated. Yeah. I looked in this a few weeks ago for another workshop that we did, and for the planes that it moves in is dictated by the disc. If you didn't have the disc, it would be a saddle, but then putting the disc in, it always creates two cavities on either side of the disc.
So like two joints basically.
Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
And then so that allows you to go on the frontal plane, the sagittal, and then the rotational, depending on where your arm is relative to your collarbone. Should I say clavicle. And hence that gives a lot of movement for your pectoral girdle opposed to your pelvic girdle. And that's why your range of motion in your shoulder or the shoulder complex is so much more than the hip. The hip, as a ball and socket joint, is a very stable joint.
Because it's deep. It's a very much deeper, deep joint.
It's got better congruence between the two, the head of the femur and the acetabulum. Compare that to the shoulder, which is the head of the humerus and the glenoid cavity. Yeah. It's a shallower joint. Therefore, it becomes the most risky joint for dislocation. So in adults,
greater degrees of movement.
Much more.
Yeah.
So for adults, the most dislocated joint in the body is – the shoulder joint?
The shoulder joint, of course.
Children? T has had this multiple times.
Oh, elbow.
Yeah, so the radial head.
Yeah, my daughter.
So because of holding their hand, holding their arm and then suspending them can sometimes pull the head.
That's not how she did it.
No?
She used to dislocate her elbow when she was younger once every couple of months and it just used to happen. Oh, no, when she fell over, she would fall over. And we didn't know what would go on. But then I figured out it was her elbow and I'll just have to pop it back in. And it's pretty easy to pop back in, just a bit of a twist and a bit of an extension and back
in. But we definitely would not recommend or prescribe relocating joints. Go to your expert physicians to do this because there could be quite bad ramifications by trying to put joints back into place with compressing nerves and blood vessels and soft tissue.
Agreed.
Can I add a couple of final points before we begin? Not begin. We haven't really begun, Michael.
Yeah, this is all the introduction to joints.
So I want to ask you a quick question.
Love it.
And I expect a correct answer here.
Okay.
Cracking your knuckles.
Yes, sir.
Does it give you the arthritis? Yes or no?
I know the answer to this. It's a very simple, simple answer. And the answer is unequivocally no, it does not give you arthritis.
All right.
Why?
Let's just quickly – I'm going to ask this back. What is the actual sound, the popping sound?
Isn't it so I could be wrong and maybe the evidence has changed, but I used to think that when you crack a knuckle, you are increasing the volume of the cavity, which means you decrease the pressure in the cavity.
Boyle's law. Right?
Which means any gas particles that are dissolved in it, because the pressure is low, it's like opening a bottle of soda pop.
Who calls it soda pop?
Our US contingent.
Okay, I think pop is a particular part of America. I think some of America is soda, some parts pop. Can you please write in via email and let us know which part of America is pop?
Or alternatively, don't, because I don't care.
I do.
So let's say soda water.
I didn't know.
Okay, I'm opening up a
soft drink.
Right? Open it up. The pressure now decreases and bubbles form.
Come out
right?
of the solution.
And you hear a sound of bubbles coming out, right? So my assumption was when you increase the cavity, you decrease the pressure. The gases that are dissolved in the cavity now come into existence and they pop, and the popping sound is the gas bubbles popping.
Beautiful.
But I don't know if that's true anymore.
From my understanding, that's correct.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah, my understanding it is. Basically, so first, the first part of the question was, does it give you arthritis? This was disproven by a physician called last name Unger. He published this in the Journal of Arthritis and Rheumatology in 1998.
Yep.
Titled, does knuckle cracking lead to arthritis of the fingers? So he cracked his knuckles on one side for 50 years and not on the other side of his hand.
Yep.
So one hand for 50 years, other hand not at all.
What an experiment.
And proved that there was no arthritis. However, there, I think there were slight weaknesses because you are cavitating and stretching ligament. So there might be some structural changes but not arthritis. My understanding more recently, they did knuckle cracking or joint cracking under the use of CT or MRI.
Yep.
And my understanding of what you said is correct, is it just changes the pressure within the joint and it causes the gas, which is CO2 or maybe nitrogen, to come out of solution. And then it takes 20 to 30 minutes for it to repressurize. And that's why you can't
crack it again.
Keep cracking it.
Makes sense. Makes sense. All right. Maddie, have
is
we done it?
Is that enough?
I think, look.
Or should we talk about?
No, we're done.
Arthritis that we'll now talk about another date.
We will do a whole episode on arthritis, which I think people will find more interesting than just the boring joints. But I think we did a good job, and I think we've helped many people understand the joints that allow for their body to
move or not move.
Correct. If you like, maybe not this episode, but other episodes.
Why do you hate joints so much? Exciting. You know, this is the foundation of a lot of manual therapy, physio, osteo, chiro. If we didn't have joints, they'd be out of work.
True. Imagine if we were just one fused form. Just that would be good.
One long bone.
All right. Stop in there. So if you want to contact us, please do so. Send us an email, gubiosciences@gmail.com. If you write us an email, you can tell us, ask us a question, make a statement, give us a little story or anecdote, whatever it may be. We're happy to read it out on the podcast. If you don't want us to read your email, please state so. If you don't want us to say your name, because we will read your name, please say, don't read my name out. No problem whatsoever. But yeah, send us an email. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes, Spotify, all that type of stuff. Tell your friends about us. Tell your family. Let your dog know. But then you have to buy him an iPad probably and some headphones. Might be a bit
probably odd. An iPad. I don't think you need an iPad.
Yeah, but dogs, the eyesight's not good enough to see on the small screen, right? And sure. I think their dog paws will be able to use an iPad.
But this is a podcast,
iPad,
not a video.
Well, we will be recording this as video soon,
okay.
But that's hell of a digression. You can contact me on social media, not Matt, because who cares anyway.
Maybe the dog wants to know about the joints.
That's true. How many joints does a dog have?
Yeah, I'm not even going to try.
No. Well, there you go. Dr. Mike Todorovic on most platforms. Please follow, say hi, and let me know what you think about the podcast. But apart from that, hope you're all well. And we'll do another episode very soon. Bye, Maddie.
Peace out. I'm doing a peace sign, which is a certain movement at my what joint is it?
I don't know, but I'm doing a peace sign as well, but only with one finger.
Yes, the third digit.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.